I don't know where to start, okay, because your YC, what? Your YC class of 2020?
I was in winter 20.
Winter?
Yeah.
The frosty. The frosty mug.
It was frosty. Sequoia sent out their second Black Swan memo. Mm. It was like watching the world fall apart over a 2-week period. Uh-huh. It was a totally normal YC batch. And then I think demo day was March 20.
Okay.
And March 1, people started hearing about this COVID thing. Mm. You know, like I think a couple cases in China and everyone ignores it. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, like 5 days before demo day, it's like a big thing.
Oh, man.
And demo day goes virtual.
No. So explain what, how does demo day usually work for you guys?
Usually, I mean, I actually.
Demo meeting demonstration.
Demonstration. Day. I don't empirically know. I never went through a normal demo day. Okay. How it's supposed to work is. YC is like it's a 2.5 month period, and you're supposed to get your company in shape to go mm-hmm. raise your seed round.
Mm-hmm. And fundraising boot camp.
Fundraising
for big kids.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, a sidebar about YC, incredible institution. Mm-hmm. Probably the partners I had there. I mean, I'll keep this positive. There are some amazing partners there.
Well, it's a big group of people. You could have a wide variety of personalities.
Exactly.
It is what it is.
Exactly. Yeah. But I had some, I worked with Gustav, amazing human being. And then the people I met there were just out of this world.
It makes Yale look like a...
Well, makes
Yale look like a bake sale.
It makes Yale look like a philosopher's club.
Yeah.
Right?
Because this is just savagery.
So I sort of like, this is like a sort of elitist thing to say, but I joke that I've been part of two YCs in my life, okay. Yale College and okay. Y Combinator.
Right.
And the difference of people is actually really interesting. Mm. Like at Yale, you have a lot of thinkers. Mm-hmm. You don't have a lot of doers. Mm. Like Yale is not the Ivy League school of like people who like to build stuff.
Right.
Yale is the Ivy League school of...
That's more like Cornell where I went, a real school.
Right.
Continue.
Right. Great public school. No, I'm just kidding.
Fucking asshole. we'll have that part.
We'll have that part cut out.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Continue. Great farmer school.
but Yale, I think... Oh, actually, I'll tell you the best lens to evaluate like what Yale is what kind of jobs everybody wanted to take like okay. when I graduated in 2012.
Okay.
And it was like everyone wanted to go into finance.
Still in 2012.
In 2012. Yeah. Tech was not known by okay. Yale in 2012.
Okay.
What year were you?
2008.
2008.
Yeah.
So like that was like.
That is what it was.
Yeah.
Tech. What's that?
What is that? Right.
That's for the West Coast people.
So interesting point about like Stanford, for example. I think mm-hmm. if you went to Stanford like in 2008, there were just a lot of open seats for you to take.
Right.
That nobody on the East Coast ever evaluated. Mm. But in my class, everyone was doing banking, consulting. Everybody wanted to be like the most ambitious people wanted to run hedge funds. Mm-hmm. Nobody wanted to go into tech. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is that 2 years later, everyone finished up their 2 years in banking and consulting, moved to San Francisco.
That was the inflection point. I left the business in around 2015, yeah. 2015, 2016,
yeah.
I think. And the writing was on the wall, dude. Mm-hmm. I was like, we're done here.
Yeah.
We're going to do, I don't know what it is that we're going to do,
yeah.
but we're not going to stick around here. But you just could feel the business changing. I mean, the thing is you go to Yale, it doesn't matter. You go, I'm going to Wall Street and then I'm going to be a hedge fund manager because as far as I can tell as a young kid, you know, just doing keg stands on the weekends, that's where I'm going to get rich, right? Whereas no one ever sits down and go, son, let me tell you something about building a company. You know what I mean? Like, where's grandpa? Where he just is like, you know, this isn't the only way to get rich. You can build a company. Right.
You know, it's really interesting.
I sound like your grandpa.
No, I had the opposite experience.
Okay.
Right. So my parents came over as Jewish refugees from the Soviet Union.
Uh-huh.
Like, were funneled to Houston, Texas. You know,
as they
had,
do
had nothing, right? Okay. My dad became an engineer at NASA. Mm. My mom's a piano teacher.
Cool. Okay.
And, you know, one of the, my dad is like allergic to business, right? He is like the only true way, to create value and to be valuable is to build stuff.
Mm.
Right. And so, you know, whether or not you want to, believe that's true, there's some virtue in it. And, when I went through college, I was like, what are these guys on Wall Street even doing?
Mostly nothing. Sorry guys, I ruined it for everybody. Mostly nothing. But whoa, hang on.
Yeah.
Your dad isn't allergic to business. What you're saying is your dad is allergic to corporate bureaucracy and the monolithic structure that is American, because building something, what's more business than building something, man?
Right. Sure. Yeah.
Am I right about that?
I think that, you know, I don't know, like, I just think there's this funny like lens that the Soviet Union offered, which was the vast, like it was a country full of lies and full of bullshit, right? Like you open up Pravda and none of it is true, right? You don't study the humanities, you don't study like philosophy, right? Because they're all imbued with this like Soviet Leninist bullshit strain, whatever it is. And so if you want the truth, you study like math or you study physics or you study engineering, right? And so I think that it was actually very common of people of that like vintage of immigration from the Soviet Union to just really be all about like the hard science and to be very careful about anything that isn't that.
Mm. And because it's not tainted
exactly
with the narrative.
Yeah.
It's freedom. There's freedom in that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. It's like pure. It can't be polluted.
And that's why there's such a, well, at least on a stereotypical level, you say there's just massive amounts of science, massive amounts of engineering and mathematics that came out of the Soviet Union.
Yes.
It's a funny little side effect, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
That's brilliant. I've actually not heard anyone explain it so clearly.
Yeah, before. It's like you put all this pressure on the entire population and what comes out.
Whoop.
There's this like the balloon that's like the math science part kind of inflates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So you sort of hear this as a young kid. You're getting perhaps a slightly different message than your Yale classmates are in their American households. And they're like, you know, Goldman Sachs, that's where you got to go. JP Morgan, that's where you got to go. So what happens when you graduate?
So I think that there was this time when I was 24, 25, when I was like, man, I had no idea about, I didn't know hedge funds existed. Mm-hmm. I didn't know, about private equity. I didn't know how much money these guys make.
Right.
Right. And I was like, I kind of wish I did, you know, like, they make a lot of money, but in my career since then, I'm actually really glad that I focus so much on building. I think it's just the most fun thing to do.
Yeah.
And now it actually turned like, I've done three companies. And for me, it's all about, what impact you're making, who you're doing it with. And then if you can make money, that's a nice side effect.
Mm.
But I don't think like money is that correlated to happiness. Like you can make a lot of money. That's great. Now you got to worry about like your kids, you know, being spoiled and their kid. Right. And so like, it always like comes back to get you in some way, but, building is just a lot of fun.
Well, because I'm looking at the companies that you've built.
Yeah.
And I'm saying to myself, you know, what is the common thread here? Like, I don't even know.
Yeah.
Usually I have some idea. I walk in the room and I look a little intelligent. You go, you know what, Nick, that is the common thread. And I'm like, I'm looking at this. I'm like, what the hell? And then my animal brain just goes, well, this must be huge money making opportunities. And you're already like, well, no, that's actually not one of my initial criteria. That's a nice side effect. Maybe that's criteria 3 or 4. So how do we get to Fair Square? How do we get to something that is in the Medicare space? Like, please.
Yeah. So I think the the journey started in Yale, actually, where I studied physics. And I wasn't that interested in physics. What I was kind of interested in was in writing code. Mm. And there was a class for students. There was a class called Hack Yale. It was a coding class taught by Yale students.
So they had the most badass
developers, hackers. It was like, you know how everyone from PayPal is now famous?
Yeah. It was like that.
So like the guy named Will Gabrick started it. Uh-huh. He was now, you know, he was like a founding partner at Thrive Capital.
Okay.
And is now the chief product officer of Stripe.
Yeah.
A guy named Miles Grimshaw was like the secretary.
Okay.
And is now a partner at Benchmark.
Yeah.
Like it's just a stacked list of people. But I started learning to code through that class.
Okay.
And I was just like, this is a whole lot more fun than physics. Mm. And I built a fake Harvard admissions website. And so like you type, it was just like my first HTML, CSS thing. Okay. And it looked just like the Harvard admissions website. And you would log in and you would get in 10% of the time. I don't think I've ever told anyone about that.
That is fucking amazing.
Yeah, because it's just kind of like a weird skeezy thing, but it was
genius.
And then I built
these weird skeezy things, by the way, like having just, you know, I'm sitting down with so many YC founders, alum that I hadn't actually, I've heard, you know, the quips from Paul Graham, the little quotes here and there, but I just sat down and read his work. It was Hackers and, was it Hackers and Artists, Hackers and Painters? I don't know. I read the whole book. Whatever. Yeah, I can't think of the fucking title.
I know he has essays. I didn't know he had a book.
But it's a collection of the essays.
Okay, got it.
It's fantastic. Yeah. And he has this entire diatribe on what really a hacker is out there to do. And there's this mischievous nature embedded in hacker culture of, hey, freedom at all costs, fun at all costs.
Yes.
And so you building the fake Harvard admission site is just right down the fairway, as far as I'm concerned, from reading Paul Graham's work.
I mean, I love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the next website I built was called Circa.
Okay.
And it was a location based chat room. I built it over winter break of my senior year.
Okay.
And the idea was it was like pre Yik Yak. It was like, hey, there can be an anonymous chat with everyone in your lecture hall.
Okay.
And I had no idea what I was doing. I was like, I had a front end built and I hadn't figured out really what a back end was or what an HTTP request was. Uh-huh. And over winter break, I'm literally emailing Will Gabrick, what's an HTTP request? And he's sending me code snippets.
Wow.
And I get this thing kind of working. And the question with a location-based chat is, how do you define the room?
Uh-huh. And how wide geographically?
Yeah, like there are a few different techniques, but I did this like the stupidest thing possible. I went to each room and
mapped it out.
And I mapped it out. The problem is when you do that, all the readings are inaccurate or they're inconsistent, right? Mm-hmm. And so you like nobody was ever really in the room.
I see.
Like when we actually we launched this thing.
Okay.
And
do you know that it doesn't work when you launch it?
I knew it'll work well enough.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
And the way we launched it, there's something in Yale Daily News. And I also put up a bunch of flyers.
Okay. You said, hey guys, check out this app. You can talk to people in class anonymously.
Yeah. And I literally I went to the biggest lecture halls and I put a flyer in every single.
That's badass, dude.
Yeah. And, we launched it and a couple people used it.
Okay.
For like 2 days.
Okay.
And it was like a really cool experience. Like I didn't sleep all night. I was fixing bugs and I was watching. There was a counter I had in my admin dashboard of number of people using it.
Total concentrically kind of all at once or just the total usage?
Exactly. No, just like, I think it was like number of messages sent.
Okay.
But there was on the first day and this thing fizzled after 2 days because like, You like whenever you went back to the room, the you would be outside of the initial coordinates. Uh-huh. So it was like, I built it terribly, but for 2 days people used it.
Yeah.
And I viscerally remember watching that counter tick up. Mm. And there is no feeling like that.
Mm.
Like watching people use the thing you created.
Mm.
And that is a, there's actually, I work for a guy named Glenn Kelman who runs Redfin. He calls, he cites a philosopher, I forget his name, but he calls the megalomaniacal pleasure of creation.
Mm.
And that's it.
Yeah.
So that got me really stoked on just building stuff.
That was your first little
taste. That was the first taste.
Ah, that's good.
First blood. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I then went to Redfin.
I just unsubscribed from the list because they keep sending me stuff today. I swear to God. I'm going to resubscribe.
Redfin?
Yeah.
What do they send you?
Isn't it real estate?
Yeah. It's like a brokerage.
So they basically take your, what I think they're doing is they're taking my search history and they're breaking it down into interest-based stuff in a city that I've looked.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, dude, I'm all over the place. So they're sending me all these emails.
Mm-hmm.
Are we growth hacking Redfin right now?
they send
them a bill.
They send me a lot of emails.
A lot.
Yeah.
Which I get it, right? Yeah. But it's like, okay, guys, like I'm a militant unsubscriber. you annoy me once.
Yeah.
You're done.
Yeah.
You're done. So
yeah.
Anyway, clearly the app is great and the web app is great. I've been using it, but anyway.
Yeah.
Redfin, we still love you guys. Okay. It's all good. It's all good. Don't worry about me. I'm fine. Okay. I just get too many emails. All right.
So I went to Redfin and Redfin was a cool experience. Glenn Kelman's amazing. CEO and what played kind of a mentorship role for me, which he was very nice to do. He didn't have to do that. But I was like, this feels slow.
Mm.
I had gone from, I think it's actually hard to go from being a student to working if work is not, you know, at a startup or a fast-paced environment. Like I was going from learning a new type of physics every quarter to like, you know, now I know exactly what's going to happen a year from now. Mm. I didn't feel like I was growing. I certainly like wasn't, I was like coding side projects on the weekends. They were all like really stupid, but I called a friend and he was like, hey, I'm not thrilled about my job either.
Mm-hmm. Classmate.
He was a classmate. And I said, hey, why don't you, move in with me.
Okay. And just build just, hacker camp.
Yeah. I had just moved into a new apartment.
Okay.
And it was too large.
Okay.
It was an amazing apartment. We were in Seattle and this was a time where you can get like, it was like two floors, two bathrooms, view of Space Needle, $1,200.
Damn.
Yeah. Or maybe $1,800. And I thought that was a lot of money. So I was like, Jason, why don't you?
Right.
I have like a couple of extra bedrooms. And we just started brainstorming different ideas.
Okay.
And
you built a physical space, but you also built a space for you guys to just think.
Well, built a space is very generous. Like I had an apartment.
Well, what I mean is you have a space, but you also say, hey, we're just going to like sit around and think for a little bit around what we want to do, brainstorm, hang out.
Yeah.
Meaning you're not pressurized to like, we have to build something. We have to create something. We've got to.
We were, I think, very aligned that we wanted to build something. But we were, I think that you really can't overstate the ambition level of someone coming out of an Ivy League school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember like walking down the street when I was 23 being like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm not like the CEO of a, you know, company worth $100 million.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's like a remarkably arrogant and like silly thing for a 23-year-old to think. But like, you know, I think certainly like it was like that was the ethos of Jason moving in. Like let's
do this thing
because
we're late. We're late already.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go do some stuff. Yeah. And so there were a couple of ideas that we brainstormed.
Trying to triangulate, hey, what are you good at and have insight into? What am I good at and have insight into?
We actually just, one of our theses was like, let's pick a really boring space.
Mm.
And we just started interviewing Yale alumni.
Okay.
And we like, there were so many different ideas. So One person was we interviewed a surveyor.
Okay.
Who was using this really expensive Garmin backpack to map out swamps. And we were like, what if we put that on your phone?
Right.
Another one was a manager at a nuclear power plant. And he's like, it's really hard for me to buy parts. So we were like, what if we created eBay for nuclear power plant parts?
Dude, this is amazing. This is the most amazing thing. Because what you've done is you basically built your own little mini incubator. You said, let's start checking the market. Let's start looking for solutions. So in your hacky kind of casual way, you're like, let's market test. And what better of a market test than your Yale alumni directory, which costs $0 to crack open, $0 for you to call.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's kind of brilliant. I have not heard anyone, it's just so, and in such an organized fashion.
I'm going to skip back to YC for a second.
Okay.
YC has all these brilliant people in it. A lot of them are like straight out of college, 22, 23. Yeah. They know nothing about the world.
Right.
The world of business, what business models exist.
Right. Well, and also what it feels like when the rubber meets the road, because we've got the textbook version of reality and then we have the fucking real version of reality where I built the perfect product and nobody's using it, right?
They all build.
Aw.
Well, they're all like, man.
Why isn't anyone using my shit?
They're like, you know what's really hard? I go out and sometimes my friends can't meet up with me. Or sometimes my friends are all meeting up over there and and they all build the app to go hang out with friends, right? And I actually think there's still a gap in the market where...
I built one of these before, just...
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I'm just cringing inside. Don't worry.
Yeah, there should be a way to match the Stanford 22, 23 year old with actual problems.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone's built that yet, but that, I think that's an interesting option.
Because you need more tactile, you need to connect more with out of your own little corner of the universe to start to see what real problems are. And especially, I like when you said, let's solve something really boring, meaning where the average 23-year-old kid who can code isn't even going to look.
Yeah. Yeah. So we were like, we decided to go into power sports.
What is
power
the fuck
sport
is that?
Power sports are
it's like battle bots where the robots fight each other.
Not far off.
Okay.
It's like motorcycles and jet skis and ATVs.
Okay. So when you go to buy power sports, I guess I'm not that much of a moron. I should have known that. Damn it. God. I know this.
So
I retracted. I didn't know what that word meant. Continue.
So the genesis was, Jason was at Capital One.
Okay.
And he had a coworker, Michael Fanfan, and we were the three who started this company.
Okay.
And Capital One had a consumer auto business.
Okay.
And also had a small power sports business. And what
lending,
yeah.
Yeah.
And what either Jason or Michael kind of observed was that there was a basically a common app for auto financing called DealerTrack.
Okay.
So if you're a dealer and someone comes in and they're like, I need a loan, you just grab their info and you submit it to DealerTrack. Mm. Dealer submits that to five different banks, responds with a few offers. And that didn't exist for power sports.
Huh. So you go to buy your KTM, you go to buy your Kawasaki.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there.
Yeah.
And you're like, there's no finance option.
There's a finance manager at the dealer and they're literally typing in the same information for, each bank that they work with.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that was the initial product that we built.
So you're sitting down as a customer, you're sitting there on the sidelines waiting for Johnny to type in the fucking thing so you can get your ATV.
Exactly.
And get out in the wild and do some power sports.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I mean, it's just this is the most absurd thing.
Damn.
Ever. It's three 23-year-olds.
Right.
So we got into an incubator called Dream It.
Okay.
Dream It Ventures is there's Y Combinator and then there's Techstars and then at the time it's probably Dream It.
Uh-huh.
I think they invested about $40,000 in the company. That was the initial slug. And we thought that was
big bucks.
Yeah.
Because just for reference, guys, basically YC just upped their $500,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It may have been 20. It may have been 20,000, but we were like, oh, we got
this.
We got validated. We got into an incubator and we moved to Austin and we were paying ourselves, you know, $500 a month. Yeah. It was miserable. Like we had no social lives. Mm-hmm. I remember my parents sent me like $300 for like,
they're like, just eat something that isn't Kraft mac and cheese.
I was like, wow, I have $300 in my bank account.
Yes.
This is a big deal.
Felt good.
Yeah. Like we would go to Trader Joe's once a week.
Mm-hmm.
Best day of the week. I would get like all the, the box stuff of like the fried shrimp.
Oh, from the freezer section.
Yeah, from the freezer section. So I would get like a bunch of boxed meals from the freezer section, mm-hmm. and that would be the first half of the week. And then I would buy a bag of frozen chicken, and that would be the second half of the week.
Nice.
Okay. So every time I would go to Trader Joe's, I was coming off of 3 or 4 days of eating this like frozen bag of chicken and frozen broccoli, and it was.
I was in Trader Joe's in South Beach the other day, and I saw a guy with a cart that must have had 200 boxes of the butter chicken in it.
Mm.
And I just said to myself, this guy is either crazy or he's building something.
Yeah.
That is what I thought. I said, he is nuts or he's building something.
Yeah.
And I just quietly kind of gave him a nod from a distance and was just like, see you out there, pal. You know what I mean? It's just like when the wild man in the forest, dude, it's just like,
you should just write him a check right there.
Yeah. And just say, dude, listen, it's
kind of a binary outcome, but
yeah, I'm going to need 7% of whatever the fuck it is that you're building and eating that many butter chickens.
There is a sort of like, there could be an episode of Silicon Valley where like initial seed investing is based purely off of like, what are you buying at Trader Joe's?
Behavior.
Yeah. And how long are you staying in the office? Right.
Right.
It's just find me the like comp sci grads from top schools who stay past like 8. Mm-hmm. I don't care what you guys are building. Just it's actually there have been worse strategies for investing.
Sure. Well, it's like, you know, in the e-com, well, in your world too, it's like the metric that matters for the week, you know, and you're like, well, this metric seems obscure, but it's connected to 10 other things we're trying to do. So if we can move this, you know, if we can move how many clicks on this one page, we're actually moving the entire throughput of the business. So it's like, if I can see how many rice and broccolis this guy is going to eat.
Yeah.
I know.
Wow.
He's in it for the long run.
So like frozen chicken and rice and broccoli is a leading indicator.
100%.
Yeah. Wow.
Print it.
Love it. So, we moved to Austin. We did this incubator and
you're single-handedly building all the
technology. Yeah, but what I built was like complete shit. I was looking for intensity at that point in my life. And like, I actually wanted to become a Navy SEAL.
Uh-huh.
I was like training to become a Navy SEAL.
Okay. For the record, everyone who's listening, you don't realize that this, let's just say it doesn't look like you sit around computers all day. It looks like you can kick some ass. Okay. This is a pretty big guy. I've had some big guys on my show and I've already cheated. I saw you did an Ironman, right?
I did an Ironman. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Continue.
Yeah. No,
don't mind me.
But, I later talked to some, I'll tell this story later.
Please do. That's what we're here for.
Right. So, I was where was I?
We're
in Austin. I was looking for intensity. Oh, right. So I was looking for intensity and I was like, oh, I want to really learn how to code. So I'll become a CTO.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense, right?
Yeah.
And I built this Common App.
Okay.
And I just want to like paint a picture here. Like we found this place in Austin. It was right off of the UT campus.
Okay.
It was the second floor. We roll in. None of the linens are clean.
Perfect.
It's winter. The heater doesn't work.
Great.
We're wearing our ski gear, writing code.
What the fuck?
The shower literally has no water pressure.
So just dribbling out.
It's just dribbling out. And I'm like, oh, that's fine. Because I
want torture.
I'm just going to go to the UT gym every day and shower there.
Okay.
So fair enough. I don't need a shower at home.
Yeah.
And we started writing code and the code I was writing was it was a web driver, right? And so there's a web testing framework called Selenium, which is basically a scripting language where you can be like, open up a browser and click on this button.
Uh-huh.
you know, scroll down, then like grab all the text from these, use these things called CSS selectors, right? Mm-hmm.
Automation and different things you could use.
Sure. Just think about it as like programming a browser to do whatever you want mm-hmm. to do. And I would go through these. I wrote a script for each banking website.
Oh, I see. Right. To automate the process of typing in manual shit.
Exactly.
Yeah, cool.
And so the code was like, there was a massive form. That uh-huh. was the Common App. Uh-huh. And then you would take the stuff and and this actually incredibly all happened on the front end because I hadn't really figured out how to build a back right. end. But you would take the content of the form uh-huh. and then you would just loop through, that you go through every WebDriver script for every bank and you would loop through and apply. And I actually set it up so that you could watch that happen live.
Perfect.
In like a little iframe. Right. A couple of dealers used it.
Yeah.
It was surprising. We just called a lot of dealers uh-huh. and we were like, can we talk to the finance manager? And we were like, hey, you know how it sucks to type stuff in all the time? Yes. Oh, you want to use our tool?
Cool. Saves
and
me an hour
yeah.
three times a day, right?
This was a case where like, I think the finance manager was like, you want to talk to me?
Baller.
Yeah.
Because nobody wants to talk to me back here. They just stick me in this back room and people yeah. hate me.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So we got a little pickup.
That's cool as hell. And that's just a little sweetie from the universe.
I think the lesson from that is, don't fortune tell, like just make plays and see. The interesting thing about like this universe is that you can't predict it. Right. And so just like put yourself out there and right. see what happens.
Right.
But that was like a 6 month period where I was writing this code and it was like buggy and I was fixing bugs and Jason, and Mike were out trying to get more dealers on our platform.
Okay.
And
so how many dealers do you get on the, to be honest with you, just getting one dealer is a fucking huge big deal.
We got like maybe three or four. Okay. Right. So May rolls around. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what the fuck am I doing with my life? Like I'm living off, we're paying ourselves $500 a month.
Yep.
I'm helping people
who buy ATVs a little yeah. faster.
On credit. Like if you need credit to buy an ATV,
it's a bad sign. It's
yeah.
a bad sign.
Yeah, it is yeah. a bad sign. You should not be buying that ATV, right? Right. And our business is not taking off. And so I was like, Jason, I'm out.
Yeah. Okay.
This is like not
the scale. You don't see scale here.
I don't see this business working.
Okay.
This is also like not something I want to spend time on. Like,
right.
I just don't care about the mission.
Right.
And I moved to San Francisco. Now, sidebar, Jason took that business to what it is today.
Can we talk about that?
Sure. I don't
just quickly.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
an outline.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's worth, you know, $1 billion. It's
probably, that doesn't suck.
No, it doesn't. It's probably, you know, you would have to have Jason on your show.
Sure.
But it could be one of the largest lenders for power sports in the United States. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. It's important. Again, you preface this nicely. You have no idea what the fuck's going to happen, especially when you're in the low moment where you're calling dealer after dealer. You're talking to Johnny and Brett and whoever in the finance department. You're like, this is never going to move the needle for me. Also, if you don't give a shit about the mission, you're just not going to have longevity to just stick it out like your buddies did. So, okay.
The thing,
story's not over, everybody. It gets better. Don't worry.
Well,
our protagonist has a lot more stuff to do here.
I think that there are two, for me, there are two sort of like lessons, if you will, to draw mm-hmm. from this. One, it really, you know, for me, like generally, I think you got to be about the mission, right? And then the second is don't bet against like great people. Like great people will figure something
out. No matter what it is.
They'll figure it out.
Even if it's like a weird opportunity, like the opportunity kind of sucks. And they're like, no, they're going to figure something out.
And then the other thing, I'm trying to come up with a more poetic way of saying this, but like the light, it's always darkest before the dawn. If you had told me at the time when I left, like Octane Lending is going to be worth $1 billion one day, I'd be like, no, dude.
You'd be like, there's no way.
I'm more likely to quantum tunnel through the floor right now. Like, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah. Mario Brothers style.
Yeah, exactly. Is that what happens to Mario Brothers?
Tiku, tiku, tiku.
Is it a quantum tunnel?
I think so.
Wow. So yeah, kudos to Jason and his team. He's built an amazing company.
That's unbelievable. Okay, so what happens now? You go back into the wild and you're like, now I'm a man without a country in Austin, Texas.
Well, so I moved to San Francisco.
Okay.
And San Francisco.
Does it matter? Like, is your location of choice, how much of an influence on your success is where you live? Mm. I have my own opinions because you're like, I got to get out of Austin, which could be for one reason or another.
I think it matters. I think in your 20s matters a lot, because if you're in a place, you want to be in like the Florence of your time. So, you know, for our time, that's right now it's New York, I think. In 2014, it was San Francisco. Like, I can't overstate the energy of like 2014 to 2017 in San Francisco.
What do you think the culture... what do you think the culture of San Francisco distill it? What the hell was going on in 2014?
I think San Francisco has always had this sort of like fuck with the system hacker culture, right? Like starting from like Shockley Semiconductor to, you know, Steve Jobs, like, hey, we're going to create a personal computer for you so you can fight the man with the mainframe.
Mm.
You know, in 2008, there was probably like a bit of a tech renaissance in San Francisco. And there was still that feeling, like now tech is totally mainstream, but at the time there was still that feeling of like it being a little alternative and it being a little weird.
Your mom wouldn't be happy if you said, I'm going out to San Francisco to start a tech company.
Personally, my mom would just be thrilled for me to have a job. But
I mean, the collective mom.
The collective mom, yeah.
Yeah. The general, you know, stereotyped American mom would be like, no.
Exactly.
My son's going to be a coder.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Terrifying.
There is a weird cultural aversion to like writing code, like to being a coder. It assumes that like you're like somewhere in the back office. And that's, yeah, I mean, like if you're like, I bet like you were a trader, I bet you were getting all the credit and the coders were in like the back office.
No comment.
Yeah, right. But like,
I'm still getting all the credit. What are you talking about?
But now like the best coders or developers, what do you ever, you want to call them, are at Jane Street.
Oh, the script is completely flipped.
Yeah.
Trust me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's why, like, that's why I end my career there and I'm like, and I'm out. So on a high note, everybody, you can.
So that's flipping. And that's like, I strongly suggest if you're watching this and you're in college, actually, no matter your age, like learn to code.
Mm.
It is the single, I mean, if you think learning to read is important, wait till you learn to code.
Yeah. The joke is when I was young, I'm like, yeah, let me flex about my C++ skills right now. I used to build hacking programs to kick people off AOL.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So that you could had more bandwidth?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's
nice.
Called TOS, Terms of Service. So you could do a few things and you'd get people kicked offline.
Yeah.
And so my brother and I would sit in the basement. It's always the basement, by the way, guys. And we would build these hacking programs.
Yeah.
This is the first time I've told anyone the name of my software.
Yeah.
It was called AO Tank. And it would just kick you offline.
Wow.
It would blow up your email box.
Mm-hmm.
This is right down the fairway for hacker stuff, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm good so far.
Great.
I think it did other things that it didn't actually do. It would just display the dialog box that said like complete, like, you know, just made you think it did something, but it didn't.
That's great. And you built that.
I built that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Kudos.
I know. I should have fucking kept up with it.
It's not too late.
What are you, Gary Vee?
Well, dude, there's so much cool stuff going on in AI right now.
Well, that's what I'm doing. Because AI, I like prompting in that world, it allows me to play a lot more and to not play catch up. It's also emerging and changing so fast. So also, I know this can sound bizarre, but AI is so close to trading algorithm construction. Mm. So like, it's really? Just like, if then do this, this, if this, this, if not that, try this.
Yeah.
Use this database to do that. It's like, I'm like, oh, this is like the shit I used to do on Wall Street. Because when I was, the world that I was in was, I don't want to call it high frequency. It wasn't that fast because the bond market straight up can't move that fast. Mm-hmm. But I was in a corner where I was the fastest gun in like the whatever in the bond market. And so we had to build our own algorithms to transact in the way that I traded, which was called spread trading. Commonly two things at once, more commonly 30 things at once. And then I had to design my own algorithms to execute those things without blowing the fucking doors off. And it's the same way that I approach AI with my AI tool that I have right now, Fast Outreach, which is getting a lot better. Now that I've told America that I built hacking programs in my basement.
That's great. You have street cred now.
I got street cred.
Yeah.
I should, you know what? I should lead with that more often when I meet people who are hackers as well.
Yeah.
I can't call myself a hacker. I gotta pick up my skills. But okay, so we go from the timeline.
Yeah,
I want to hear about Fair Square, dude. I want to hear how you landed on this opportunity. Now that I know how you think a little bit more,
okay,
and you're looking for these corners.
Yeah,
right. How do you get to Fair Square? We've been all over the place. We've been to Austin. Yeah, we go to San Francisco.
Yeah. So Fair Square. The origins were November 2019. I get into YC. The idea was something called Help Button. It's tech support for seniors, right? Like, what if you're a senior and you're like, I don't know how to update my computer. Like, well, there's a button you can push.
Oh.
And so I got
general help. So technical.
It was
support.
Like, tech support
for seniors. My phone isn't doing the thing that I wanted to do.
Yeah. And I got into YC with that. And as I started to build it, I realized it was like a terrible business. The people who can't, there's so many permutations of your like environments, right? Between like what kind of computer you have, what OS you have, like the people who can't solve it by Googling it are just like really challenged. And, and the only, you need to like get a Zoom going with them. Then you need to share access to their computer. And it's just like, they probably have like low bandwidth.
Yeah.
And then if you think about like the unit economics of that business, it's just terrible. So I applied to YC with that business.
Okay.
I showed up to YC with a different business. I actually don't even remember what it was, but I just was pivoting through different ideas for seniors because I wanted to build something for my parents. And you know, one of the ideas was like collecting oral histories, right? Again, like business model there, not clear what it was. And then I happened upon
stories.
Yeah. Like you record your family story.
Cool. Okay. Yeah.
And then I happened on this Medicare thing. Right. And I talked to my parents about what it was like to turn 65 and I'll just give a little background on Medicare. So, Medicare is government subsidized health insurance for people, who are disabled or over 65. And so most people, when they turn 65, if they're, you know, they'll leave their group coverage, their employer coverage, and get on Medicare.
Right.
Or maybe they didn't have group coverage, they get on Medicare. And it's a super like intimidating process because you're dealing with the government.
It's a rocky transition.
It's totally. So you specifically enroll in something called Medicare Parts A and B.
Okay.
And you have to figure out like, do I enroll in A? Do I enroll in B? When, right? When you finally do enroll in these things, and you do on the Social Security website, it's like easy enough. You're in them. They don't cover a whole lot.
Right.
So then you look for some sort of additional coverage.
Okay.
And there are literally 50 plans out there for you to choose from. And just imagine like your mom or dad, they're 65. Like, they've got 50 plans to choose from. And they're not all equal, right? It's sort of like an Indiana Jones and the Holy Grail type situation. Like, one or two are probably a good fit.
And the other ones will kill you.
You get another and you like literally turn to sand.
Right. You're like, right. It's over.
Yeah, exactly. But you could die sooner. You could live a worse life. You might not be able to see the doctors you want. The decision's actually a little irreversible. It's hard to get out of one type of plan into a different type of plan. And by and large, so what do people do? They're like, I need help. Like, how do I choose one out of these 50 plans? And
I'm guessing the 50 plans are presented in no particular order, alphabetical order, just like, it's like, choose your destiny with absolutely no guidance whatsoever.
Well, there's we can get into that. There's a bunch of well-intended government regulation that says you need to be aware of all the options. so great. Here are 50 options. But so how do you choose? Most people, like the options right now are still like, talk to the insurance guy down the street or go to a website. And I secret shopped all these websites when I started mm-hmm. this business and put in your phone number. Mm-hmm. And then some dude's literally going to call you 10 times a day for 2 months. And
try to sell you shit or fucking or what?
Yeah. And that dude is...
It's a lead.
It's a lead. It's trying... Exactly. And that person's going to try to sell you the plan that pays him or her...
The most commission.
The most commission. And they're not going to make sure that your doctor's drugs are covered.
This is a nightmare.
It's a total nightmare.
Oh my God.
And Nick, nobody actually understands how bad it is.
Like, I'm already getting chills and I'm not 65.
If you have parents that you love, uh-huh. you should send them our way and yeah. we will do an audit on all their coverage.
Okay.
Because... When you're looking at this from afar, you're like, oh, a broker, how bad could they be? I'll tell you how bad. Like, we have interviewed thousands of these brokers to come up to, you know, to hire the 20 that are currently at Fair Square. The vast majority of them know nothing about Medicare Parts A and B or Medicare supplements. They only know about a type of plan called Medicare Advantage plans that have the highest commission. Mm. They are just Medicare Advantage enrollment machines. So anyway, so that's the problem that we identified. And the other thought I had was, you know, seniors have iPhones now. Uh-huh. The people turning 65 now have had 20 years of Amazon and Kayak and these like online transparent customer obsessed shopping experiences. Yeah. And they're going to be like, wait, I have to talk to this insurance guy in 2023?
I don't want to talk to anybody.
Exactly. That's the opportunity. Right. And so we're building a tech enabled and customer obsessed health insurance brokerage for seniors. Mm. You know, and it's going pretty well so far. We've raised about 20 million bucks, got a little north of 10,000 clients.
It's fantastic.
All 50 states. The two metrics that I'm proudest of are we have an NPS score of 98.
Wow.
Industry average is like 13.
Yeah.
And we keep 90% of our clients year over year. Wow. Industry average is 50%.
Wow. What percentage of this is because you see the opportunity and then you need to deliver the right solution. Mm-hmm. You can't just see the opportunity. Mm-hmm. Is this a tech thing? Is this a, like, what's the mix here?
Yeah. So some people enroll online. Some people only want to talk to a human being.
And you have human beings.
And we have amazing human beings enabled by amazing technology. Mm. Right. And so the vast majority of people want to do a hybrid.
Okay.
Right. And so what does the hybrid look like? It'll be like, hey, you want to get on the phone with us, schedule a meeting. We'll send you a link to your portal before the meeting. You log in, you read a little background about Medicare, you put in your doctors and drugs, and then you get on the phone with an agent, with one of our Medicare experts who like already has all the context about you.
And there's an alignment baked in there.
Yeah.
Incentive alignment, as opposed to, this guy's going to call you 10 times a day and sell you the exact fucking plan that pays him the most.
Right, right.
Which, hey, if I was that broker, I'd do the same thing. I'm not evil. I'm incentivized, right?
Sure. You can think about what we do in two ways. Like the optimistic way is it's the right thing to do, right? So just crazy idea. Let's do what's right for our customers.
Right.
If you want to be cynical about it, just call it like long-term greedy. Right? Like, we think the best way to build a great business is to just always do what's right for folks. We might make less money in the short term, but they'll stick around with us
right.
long term. And Costco and Amazon have proven that.
Sure.
And
Neiman Marcus and all those other ones are having a little bit of trouble. Continue.
Sure. And then what we do on the agent side is when we have like a performance compensation scheme, but
right.
we don't, pay them any more to, you know, to enroll folks in one plan versus another.
Right. So you've eliminated that.
The agents have no incentive to enroll you in a higher commission plan. They get paid the same no matter what.
I like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I love about this story, your story, is there is a ton of experimentation. There is a ton of play. There's a ton of failure, but also success. You are willing to do things that most people aren't by talking to real people, by getting closer to reality quicker than later. And the thread here that I feel that I genuinely, you're saying it in the most clearest terms that I've heard on the pod so far, is it's like really handing something back to people and spotting a serious problem and focusing exclusively on that, worrying about the money later. And what you're doing at Fair Square sounds, I walked in the room not understanding where the idea came from. And now I think I have a better idea. So dude, I love this conversation. I want to hear what, keep me posted, man.
Yeah.
It's awesome to see you, man. And I'll catch you next time I'm in New York.
Awesome. Great to meet you, Nick.
Good to meet you too, bro. See if I can barely. I love it. That's a pod.